and talking to folks from every corner about what issues are coming up and are of importance. A couple of themes that have resulted, especially from the governor's visioning panel, but have to some extent carried over to the joint committee, are congestion mitigation, especially in our part of the state. Investment in transit, both big and small, figuring out how to crack that nut, especially in rural communities, and also seismic resilience. So a little bit of context when we move into the agenda. And we'll come back to many of these. We're not going to tick through each one, and this is certainly not an exhaustive list. So looking at the draft state legislative agenda, before I turn it over to Dan to talk about housing, just to give a little bit of structure for how we build our agenda and the components of it, we have three different pieces. We have priorities, initiatives, and policy positions. So priorities are these big, massive, difficult issues that the city is committing substantial time and effort to try and move these efforts ahead. Initiatives are specific bills where the city is taking the lead. They also are very time and resource intensive to advance. And then policy positions, which are going to be on the next slide, are other important issues where the city is engaged in passing and defeating legislation during the session, and it's a way for us to signal or forecast those issues that are of importance. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dan on the first priority.
So in the draft state legislative agenda that you have before you, the first proposed priority is affordable and stable housing. This is a three-pronged proposal, including first, establishment of a just cause eviction policy. Right now in Oregon, a landlord may evict a tenant without providing or stating a cause for that eviction, which is known as no-cause evictions. Second, this priority calls for repealing the state preemption on local rent stabilization policies. And third, it calls for supporting additional investments in affordable housing and homeless services. So those include some of the items that I called out in the governor's budget, as well as efforts that we expect to continue investments in the emergency housing account and the state homeless assistance program.
Transportation is also a multi-pronged priority. First and foremost, talking about preserving and maintaining the almost $10 billion asset that Portland has in its transportation infrastructure. Also highly prioritizing safety and investments in safety, everything from a little closer. Thank you, Commissioner. Is it on? I have to kind of, all right. This is a problem. Got it. Of course I got the quiet microphone, the soft talker. So I'll back up just a little bit. Transportation is also a multi-pronged priority, and first and foremost, we're focused on preserving and maintaining the almost $10 billion asset that the city has in its transportation infrastructure. Safety is also incredibly important, and including jurisdictional transfer to make sure that the ownership of these critical roads are being put to their the appropriate use based on their ownership. So a key example is Powell Boulevard and how it could be designed better for urban uses. Also funding and safe routes to schools and making sure that you have infrastructure for kids to safely get to and from school. And another prong of this is reducing congestion, but doing so in a multimodal strategy. So it's not just about tackling those major projects like Rose Quarter, which we're supportive of in our agenda, but also making critical investments in transit and making sure that you have investments for bike lanes, sidewalks, so that people can get to and from where they need to go without having to get in a single car trip.
The next priority on the draft agenda in front of you is improving air quality. It calls for the city to support both state investments as well as legislation to reduce emissions of air toxics, including but not limited to diesel emissions. The city is engaged in the Cleaner Air Oregon administrative rulemaking process led by Governor Brown and the Department of Environmental Quality. We anticipate that there will be budget proposals for DEQ's ability to administer and enforce existing regulations, as well as legislation to authorize DEQ and direct DEQ's investment of proceeds from the VW settlement, which will mean approximately $68 million for Oregon to reduce diesel emissions. And we also anticipate additional legislation proposing ways to reduce diesel emissions, and look forward to supporting that.
Speaking of the VW settlement, I just want to just throw this out there. I learned a couple of weeks ago that the VW settlement will include a couple of $1 billion for electric vehicle infrastructure, and I think it'll be kind of a competitive process as to who gets that money. So that's something I just hope that think the city and the state should be thinking about. How do we access some of that couple of $1 billion?
Turning to the next priority, protecting and enhancing local funding and authority. So every legislative session, the city sees proposals for restricting its authority to tackle policy issues at the local level or to raise local revenues. And we anticipate that this session will be no different. We fully anticipate that there will be threats to the city's authority to manage and charge compensation for use of the public right-of-way, the city's authority to levy system development charges, the city's land use authority, as well as the city's urban renewal authority. And the city will vigorously oppose those proposed preemptions on local authority. And then lastly, the draft priority before you is supporting rural communities. Traditionally, the city has identified items proposed at the legislature that are of particular importance for our rural partners, communities in other parts of Oregon, and we're actively consulting with those partners around the state to identify issues for the upcoming session. Turning to draft initiatives.
So before you turn, sure. If I could just carrying over from the national agenda, healthcare, and particularly care for people with experiencing mental illnesses, I think should be on there. And then given that our president-elect has a history of being proud of assaulting women, I think domestic violence is something that the state legislature will hopefully be adding more resources to.
Thank you. Turning to the draft list of initiatives, the first on the list before you is in the area of expanding opportunity and growing homeownership programs, specifically expanding eligibility for the homeownership limited tax exemption, which right now authorizes local governments to enact programs to promote development of additional single-family affordable housing units. Specifically, this proposal would expand eligibility to include purchase by low and moderate income folks of existing housing units, as well as rehabilitation of existing units.
Under foster good government, first bullet is auditor oversight. This is, we are seeking a clarification so that when a city elected auditor reviews a city record or information, making sure for an auditing or investigatory purpose that it doesn't waive privilege. The next bullet is liquor licensing fees. These fees that the city collects for application or renewal have never been increased. And we know that the cost of the impact of these businesses far exceeds what we're actually able to bring in. So that initiative is about increasing those fees and being able to cover our costs better. And then finally, under building resilience, these are two concepts from the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management. So the first is about providing potential home buyers with notice. So if your home was constructed before a certain time in the 1970s, it more likely than not is not bolted to its foundation. So when a major earthquake event happens, it can slip off its foundation, and that poses major threats to life safety, to recovery efforts. And this simply puts in a disclosure statement in the seller's disclosure statement so that a potential homebuyer has some knowledge when they're entering into possibly a new home.
Elizabeth, I just want to clarify that it's a pretty simple and arguably somewhat vague statement. It just asked sort of as part of a long list of disclosures sellers are required to make. It would add one where it asked the question, was your home built before 1978? If so, is it bolted to the foundation? Is it not devoted to the foundation? Or don't you know? So basically the idea is just to have a vehicle to flag the issue for buyers so that they'll know it's something that they might think about. And we've been, Timur, my office, and Carmen have been talking to the realtors who we expect would be the most logical opposition, and they're okay with this. So we think that if we have a sponsor in the legislature, it has a pretty good chance of passing.
Thank you, Commissioner. The second resilience item has to do with providing local governments with a tool so that we could have a property tax incentive to retrofit or to help building owners retrofit their commercial, industrial, or multifamily buildings. Because again, especially some of these larger structures can pose major life safety threats and also impact our ability to recover after a major event. If the streets are littered with unreinforced masonry, for example, that poses a major impact to our recovery efforts.
Thank you. First of all, with regard to the affordable and stable housing priority, I believe you said craft a just cause eviction policy. Isn't the objective to remove the preemption so that we can create a policy here, or do you actually want the legislature to craft the policy? What's your priority there?
So the draft priority as described is to support establishing a statewide just cause policy.
All right. Well, I don't get a vote here, but I want to go on the record as saying I'd like them to lift the preemption and let us craft our own. That would be my personal preference, not necessarily that of the council. Second of all, support for rural communities. That's interesting, and I didn't know that existed. Is that a new priority?
Been around for at least the past three or four sessions.
Maybe even more, for sure.
Call it our rural agenda.
That's right.
What is the genesis? I'm going to never get used to this. What is the genesis of that particular priority?
I think it's just the constant perception that Portland doesn't care about the rest of the state. So we felt by calling out and having a specific rural agenda that it would address those, respond to those concerns, and I think it's been very well received by legislators.
And one of the items I remember being on was the support for biofuels, with the farmers providing some of the raw fuel, and Randy Leonard.
If I may, I strongly applaud this. I think it's a great idea, and I heard as recently as yesterday from a very high-ranking rural legislator that would counter this argument, that suggested that we're not really leveraging or working as closely as we could with rural Oregon. So I'm really pleased to see this, and I hope to help get the good word out about what we're trying to do here. Last but not least, one final question. All of these were in the context of support. Is there a difference as you look at this list of priorities between support versus champion? Are there certain policies where we're going to have more than a passive supporting role?
So I'll just jump in for a moment. I think when it comes to the housing conversation, if the last legislative session is anything like the incoming legislative session, there are going to be a number of voices urging the legislature, but the city of Portland and this city council is poised to play a very important role in that. It really was this council's involvement that helped push inclusionary zoning over the edge, meaning the Portland Housing Bureau can provide data to support the actions of and the policy actions of the legislature. I see the same thing happening this coming session, and I think the leadership of you, Mr. Mayor-elect, and of this council is going to be critical to the passage of some of these very difficult issues that oftentimes sometimes take more than one session to do. on transportation funding, and Elizabeth has been working on this for about a year and a half with PBOT. Portland is going to bring a very different voice to this this conversation than it would be without the city of Portland being a voice. So I think in some of these high profile, we might sort of underplay our role in describing to you, but the city of Portland has been a leader on many of these things. And I think that is going to continue, especially under the leadership of the student council.
Okay, thank you. Can I follow up something on the mayor-elect said? Because it reminded me that in the last session, we had a similar conversation around inclusionary housing. And the conversation went something like this. The city of Portland, we made inclusionary housing, lifting the preemption, our number one legislative priority. There were some preliminary conversations that went something like this. Maybe we'll do a carve out for Portland and maybe that'll take care of the problem. The leadership came back and said to us that they want a rising tide to lift all the boats, and they wanted to see where they could leverage off of us a statewide fix. I don't profess to be these are the experts, at least in the inclusionary housing discussion when we went through that exercise. But what I learned is there's a delicate balance there. And the first challenge we face is finding 16 votes in the Senate, which has been made a little more complicated. I think the split is now 17-13. So it was 18-12 last time. So we can assume that's a little more complicated. And then without airing all this in public, we did hear from the leadership that there was a desire to have, apply the benefits of this to statewide. And so at some point, since Mayor-elect, you've put on the table the idea of lifting the preemption for us, what I'd like to know more about when we have our follow-up discussions is what's the interplay between trying to leverage a statewide benefit, recognizing that it may benefit people that don't have the political will at the local level to take a preemption and lifting the preemption and put in place the protection, versus making sure that we get the kind of strong protections that the mayor-elect has announced that he would like to see for Portland. That's the tension, and it played out particularly around inclusionary housing. And, I want the strongest, personally, I agree with the mayor-elect, I'd like to have the strongest hand possible for the city. But if in the process of doing this, we can extend the benefit to all renters in the state of Oregon, I want to understand that trade-off. And that's where the leadership last time kind of weighed in on inclusionary housing. Dan knows more about this than I do. He's forgotten more about this than I know. And so that's the discussion we'll hopefully have in terms of the strategy and the tactics. And I see you nodding. So
yes.
You won't be here, Martha. But
thank you, Commissioner. Although
did I state correctly what you told me before?
I think that's a fair assessment. And Mayor-elect, the sort of this tension between lifting a preemption and just letting local communities solve local problems is certainly a theme we have been hitting our delegation hard with. And some of the members of our delegation have now picked up that theme and have started articulating that sometimes the best thing the state legislature can do is get out of the way of local communities to solve local problems. I think on housing, we have a statewide coalition of great groups who are working together to build a lot of momentum. On the issue of just cause, I think there will be several vehicles. One of them will likely include a straight preemption lift. One of them will likely include establishing a just cause standard. And there's going to be a fair amount of communication about ultimately what can you get the votes to pass and what does that look like? But I think the voice of this incoming council and what would make the most sense is going to be a really important voice in how to drive that forward. I will say that the dynamics that have changed a little bit is I think the landlords coming into this session are less likely to cooperate than they even were last session. So I think the it's not even just the numbers between the House and Senate that are getting more difficult. I'm seeing more entrenchment of interests on both sides and less willingness to negotiate and compromise, and I think that may be one of the bigger challenges that will be faced this session.
One comment, and then I'll stop. If we think that they're going to be tougher in their negotiations, why would we start with a weakened position in our negotiations? I mean, if our priority is, as Commissioner Fish articulated it, and I certainly support, why isn't that our starting position? Why go in there with our mid-range or our final position? That's all.
I was going to say, and I think that's a fair point. Mr. Mayor-elect, would love to talk with you more about that. It is, part of this is going to be about what you have a big housing coalition that has a statewide agenda, and they, and you've got groups that have, that include some of our principal housing advocates in Portland. So I think there is a desire to have a unified approach and to walk in arm in arm. What is the strongest bill we can get out of the legislature? So I think the idea is a shared one, understanding that there's also a desire of the statewide coalition not to leave the rest of the state behind. And there's particularly sensitivity in that the inclusionary zoning bill that was passed is perceived by other communities throughout the state that are having a housing crisis as primarily helping Portland because of the 20-unit threshold. So that's just an additional dynamic to keep in mind, but a conversation we would love to have with you and through these legislative days next week about what might be the best bill to bring forward.
So let me flag another set of issues that's not on the list and just, again, plant some seeds. We're the only jurisdiction in the state that has a significant gang violence problem. We have the largest communities of color in the city. We passed the most progressive ban the box ordinance, and the legislature passed a weaker one. I believe there's going to be considerable interest in criminal justice reform next session, some of which could bear on our situation. So repealing Measure 11, modifying Measure 11, otherwise retuning the criminal justice system to have different outcomes, particularly for people of color, something that the Black Male Achievement Initiative folks and both our volunteers and our staff are focused on, and that I think you're going to hear a lot more from the community about. We have some successful examples like the service coordination team that get people with a criminal record and other issues off the street and into housing and into jobs. You know, we need more of those pipelines. But we also need less barriers and I don't think ban the box itself, in and of itself, is enough, and I don't think any of us thinks that. So, again, I just want to flag that. I'm not sure if Portland corporately needs to lead that charge or be in that charge, but that charge, I believe, will be taking place, and it will be led in part by people from our community that care a lot about those issues and who see the human cost of the status quo. So that's a set of issues that's not on the list yet. Doesn't have to be on it right now, but I would urge you to think about it.
Mayor, I'm glad you brought that up. This is something that I think the county obviously would be nice if they took the lead on, but I think one of the more dramatic criminal justice reforms you could have is, and we talked with Representative Williamson about this a couple of years ago, is for the state to adopt a system where they tell the counties, in effect, if you send fewer people to our prisons, we will send the savings back to you to spend in prevention. Because right now, counties have no incentive to send fewer people to prison. In fact, they have an incentive to send as many people as possible to prison as opposed to sending them to jail or doing something else because the state pays for the prison time. So that, to me, is the holy grail. And it would be great if that conversation got revived.
Two comments and two proposed additions. Portland Harbor Superfund cleanup, I think we should send a letter to the governor's office applauding the governor for putting $10 million in her budget, and we should defend it. That in a time of real budget challenges in Salem, that gives us a chance to do some early action, and we should applaud that. Second, I don't know why drought resilience keeps showing up in this document. I just want to put a plug in for the fact that our biggest challenge around drought is that when the governor declares a drought emergency, we have to do all these PSAs saying, but not Portland. So, I mean, it's an anomaly in that we're all for conservation and, you know, we're part of the team. But one of our challenges is we have an abundance of water, and so I'm being lighthearted, but it does complicate things because we start hearing from a lot of people worried about drought. We actually don't have a drought problem, and I met with the mayor of Milwaukee today, and I said, can we sell you water? I mean, we have a lot of water to sell, and we'd like to expand our customer base. Could I propose two additions, colleagues, for consideration? One is a growing piece of our local economic development strategy is capturing more than our fair share of film and video. And there will be a robust discussion about Greenlight Oregon labor rebates and the Oregon Production Investment Fund programs in the legislature. There's going to be some very tough trade-offs, but since we do very well off those programs, and without them, shows like Grimm and Leverage would not come here, I would argue that we should have it on our legislative agenda as something that we want to champion. And I think it would be a policy position, but I would defer to you, Martha. And that Tim Williams and the governor's office would very much appreciate us weighing in, because, again, we get more than our fair share of benefits. And without that program, these shows don't come here. So, colleagues, I think in the past we've done that, and I'd like to suggest we include it and then put some stronger, I propose some language. I think we can get some tougher, a stronger language. And the second is we're a little thin here on safety net services. And one of the safety net service that we are a great beneficiary of is 211. And 211 is also an urban rural. That is, they're seeking some dedicated state money so they can expand to counties that don't have these kinds of things. But we're lucky. We have 211 and other places you can call. But I think both as an urban rural and as a safety net program, we should join our friends at 211 in seeking some dedicated money from the state legislature. I would ask the support for that as well as part of our agenda.
So I would also remembering that Commissioner Novick has been working on responsible scheduling, and we were preempted from doing anything until after this session. But I, for one, would be more than happy to stir the pot a bit and have some discussions about doing it, if that would be helpful. But I think it would be better to do that statewide as well.
Great, thank you. And thank you, Commissioner. And I think part of this this discussion is that we haven't yet gotten to the policy positions in the agenda, of which flex scheduling is on our list.
We're not leading that, and it's not an initiative?
We're not leading as an initiative because there are other groups actually are taking the lead. So it's a place that where Portland can be in a strong support position. And the big issue that's going to come up, and Commissioner Novick remembers as well, is there's a two-year moratorium on what cities can do. We've been working with the Fair Shot Coalition and others to have a lot of folks hold the line that moratorium is not extended. I think we can expect that is going to be a fight this coming session over flex scheduling to basically keep, again, the state from getting in the way of local decision-making.
I do want to note that yesterday morning, the Speaker of the House asked me who's going to be the city's champion for fair scheduling. So I'll be happy to report that that will be Commissioner Fritz.
Run into the other policy positions.
Thank you, Mayor. So for those folks viewing at home, the slide has been advanced to the 2017 draft policy positions. This is where you see a wide swath of topics. There's a lot of overlap with the themes that are popping up that we addressed earlier in the presentation. And in the interest of not picking favorites, I'll open it up to discussion.
So, Elizabeth, we're about to finally finish work on the comprehensive plan, and we have bet the house on brownfield remediation. I mean, it is the centerpiece, one of the centerpieces of our economic development strategy. So in light of that, in light of the fact that we've had strong support from people like Representative, now Senator Lou Frederick, and others who see both an economic development, an environmental, and an equity play, why is that a policy position and not an initiative?
Commissioner Fish, I think the short answer is we are not necessarily expecting the Brownfields Coalition to make a big push for new tools at the state level. We do have that on the draft policy position list because it's an ongoing area of emphasis for the city, and we want to flag that for members of the legislature and be prepared to weigh in support if people do bring proposals forward. But we're not rallying with other folks behind a big push this session.
And let me just add on to that. I think one of the challenges for Portland's legislative agenda is that, and we'll look to this council and our incoming council to really help prioritize what our asks are of our legislative delegation. We are going to have to say these are our top priorities. And then when it comes to funding, since we are facing a $1.7 billion shortfall, we really welcome your input about what are those issues where we want to say, we need the legislature to fund these top three things, and these three things will have the biggest impact on whether it is the safety net services in Portland or whether it's economic development investments. But just think about, as we go to our especially legislative leadership, the shorter we make our list, the more impactful it will be, and there are a lot of extremely worthy concepts out there. It's one of our struggles and one of our challenges, and we really look for your guidance and input between now and January to really help us hone those issues.
I can offer one more thought. As the lobbyist for Brownfields the past two sessions, and Dan and I have switched issues a little bit, but we were successful in both the 2015 and 2016 sessions in passing legislation that gave local governments more authority, both in the property tax incentive realm and the land banking arena. And we're still working on the local level at implementing, and I think there is a little bit of wait and see for how those new tools are actually playing out.
One addition I would suggest, if anybody wants to take it up and champion it, which is, our property tax system is extremely unfair, and it's particularly unfair to people in East Portland, and particularly so when it comes to bonds. Because of the way Measure 50 plays out, people who live in the recently gentrified areas of inner East Portland sometimes pay property taxes where their property is treated as worth about a fifth as much as it's actually worth, whereas everybody east of 122nd, and most people east of 82nd, are paying the maximum that they can pay under Measure 5. Now, with local option levies, they're actually kind of saved by Measure 5 because they're paying as much as they possibly can. When we pass bonds, they are hammered because bonds are outside the Measure 5 limits. So we have a system that is extraordinarily unfair to east, across the board, but particularly to East Portland. And one idea I've suggested to, this requires statewide votes, but an idea I've suggested to some legislators is ask the voters they'd be willing to say that bonds and local option levies are calculated based on the real market value of property rather than the Measure 50 assessed value. So that wouldn't be a sweeping change. I think it would probably draw out less opposition. And it might be, I mean, actually, the local media has been pretty good about pointing out some of the inequities. So I think the media on this one issue might be on our side. So that's an idea that some legislators have expressed interest in. So I think it would be great if it's something that was we added to our lengthy agenda.
Another one I would put on the watch list, at least as an issue, just from what I've been hearing recently, is we are not yet dealing in Oregon with the significant effect of fentanyl. The new, relatively new narcotic drug that's caused 555 deaths in British Columbia so far this year from overdoses, 100 times more powerful than heroin. I don't know how long we have until it arrives here. The naloxone antidote works, but has to be applied in time, and the time is very short when someone has taken fentanyl. So Oregon is going to have to deal with that threat, and in terms of both interdiction and treatment and education and all the rest, the state has a role to play there, and guess whose streets that problem is going to show up on the most? It will be here. So sorry to be a downer on that subject, but it's. I was talking to Gregor Robertson from Vancouver and just came home and said, Police Bureau, you got to get up there and talk to these folks right away and learn what we can learn about this before we're dealing with that. I mean, our first responders, Fire Bureau, they've used naloxone like 800 times. The Police Bureau has used it 20 or 30 times. So they've saved a lot of lives with this antidote. But one of the things they're doing in BC is they're making the antidote free and available to the public. So if you have a drug addict in your family, you keep a dose kit around the house because the public safety professional might not get there fast enough to administer the antidote. So it's one I think that on the public safety side, be nice, since we are fortunately blessed by not yet being in the jaws of this problem, it would be nice to move faster than the problem's arrival.
Isn't it nice that we have Dr. Sharon Myron as commissioner-elect at the county? Because she was on the forefront of being aware of the opium challenges. So I'm excited to be able to partner with her.
Martha, you said earlier that we're going to need to be focused on the agenda in order to have an impact. So can I just talk out loud for a sec on this, just to see if I'm reading between the lines correctly here? So in our priorities, we've listed housing is our number one. It's the first in our priority list. And renter protections this year are what inclusionary housing was last year. Am I on the are we agreed
so
far?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so we're going to make renter protections the same priority we did IZ, which was our most important ask last year.
I think we actually were not supposed to make decisions in work
sessions. No, you're right. I'm trying to suss out her recommendations, but we're not as I can't speak for my colleagues, so let me be clear, I'm speaking for myself. So renter protections appears to be a candidate for the number one housing priority. Transportation funding appears to be a candidate for the top infrastructure spending, particularly since the governor has announced that that may be her priority, and so we'd want to get our fair share. And Mayor, I'm not sure which is going to end up being the biggest regulatory issue next year, whether it's Superfund, if we get the ROD, and then we have to be working incredibly closely with the state and OHA and others, whether it's Columbia River levy, and depending on what the feds do on that. But there seems to me to be one or two candidates here for big, complex regulatory issues where we're either playing offense or defense or both. So those three jump out at me. There's a lot of other things I love here. I love all my children. But I'm just, if you're asking us to work towards clarity, at least on my list, transportation funding, renter protections, and then Superfund, the relationship with the state and how we address Superfund, particularly if we get a ROD in January, seems to me to be three contenders.
And under transportation, we have had requests for capital highway funding that we've almost all the way there with the various things that Commissioner Novick has got passed. And as he's pointed out, since the majority leaders in both chambers are responsible for Capital Highway, it would be nice once in a while to do something for their districts.
And then, I'm glad you mentioned that because it jogged my memory, and that is our staff won't fail to forget this, but a big issue for us in transportation funding is there dedicated funding in the package as the governor proposes or the legislature processes it for orphan highways that the city would like to take ownership of as city streets, but has not done so because there's a giant maintenance liability or construction liability associated with it, particularly Powell, but also 82nd, also Barber. So how that package addresses orphan highways is very much in the city's interest.
And I know you're doing this anyway, but I'd like to have it on the list, and that's cannabis regulations. Obviously, that's going to continue to evolve over time, and I really appreciated in the last session how you kept us informed of what was going on, and obviously the Office of Neighborhood Involvement will be happy to support you in whatever you need to do with that.
Commissioner Fritz, to that point, there are two cannabis, well, probably three actually, items, but they don't have their own heading. So under general government, you have marijuana tax revenue, and then under public safety, you have unlicensed marijuana business regulation. So there are a few items, but they've been integrated into other headers of the agenda.
Thank you for pointing that out. And obviously, you're going to be tracking everything. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what the state does in this next session as they look at social consumption, other of the interesting things we're going to do.
Absolutely, and the Joint Committee will actually continue this upcoming session. We thought that it was going to be retired, so more to come.
On transportation, I just want to flag one particular issue, which is that the voters of Tigard decided a few weeks ago that it's okay with them that the city of Tigard participate in discussions about a future light rail line. So, I hope that there's going to be a big push in this legislative session that if there's a transportation package, it includes potential dedicated funding for Southwest Corridor light rail. We're going to have a big push to raise a whole bunch of match for the federal money we hope to get. But in the past, we've gotten a chunk of money from the state, and I would assume there's going to be a push to do that this time as well.
Other
question. Is this the last presentation, Martha, that you're going to be a part of, or is there something before the end of the year where you're updating us on legislative affairs?
Commissioner Fish, thanks so much for that question. So this is actually my last time officially in front of the City Council, and I have the great pleasure of handing the baton on an interim basis over to Elizabeth and the rest of the team.
So we're going to have an opportunity or two to make a fuss over you, but let's start here.
I was hoping you were going to say, let's start later.
No, we're going to start here, Martha, because we're here talking about policy and governance. Later we'll have maybe lighter moments and best of Martha Pellegrino moments. But the reason we have clout in the legislature is only partially attributable to the elected officials here and shared a bit with your staff, but is hugely the work of you and your credibility and your integrity and the way that you have built relationships with the legislature and with people all over the state. I've seen it lots of ways. I've seen it in Pendleton. I've seen it at league meetings. I've seen it in the legislature. And the city of Portland is in your debt for the work that you have done. And I'm so proud of the work that you've done. And you've done it in a way that has made us stronger and better liked at the same time. And that ain't easy. So thank you.
I'd like to add my thanks to you, and as one of only 9 women leaders of the 30-some bureaus in the city, you've been a credit to all of us, and I appreciate the way that you have gently guided me over the years until I feel like I am able to participate as constructively as you always hope I will.
I want to just add, Mayor, that we're losing not only the best public lobbyist in the business, but we're losing the number one women's soccer fan in this building. And that's saying a lot because Commissioner Fritz and I have given you a run for your money. We're also, I think, losing someone who has the best diplomacy skills of anyone we've seen. And I just, when I think back on my own highlight reel, it's the number of different and very gentle ways you told me I was barking up the wrong tree. But you did it in such a kind and thoughtful and loving way that it never rankled. It got us back on track. But as Charlie said, it's when we are with you in Salem or other places that we really get to a sense of the magic, because you're so highly regarded and you've given us credibility across. And some of the assignments you've taken, you don't always take the easy ones, like heading out to Pendleton. You raised your hand on that. That's public service at its best. Such sacrifice. I join with my colleagues in saying you will be greatly missed, and it has been a privilege to work with you, an absolute privilege.
I would echo everything my colleagues have said, and I just want to point out, I don't think without Martha we would not have lifted the ban on inclusionary zoning, because her work on that was tireless. Her connections to every legislator, they were always constantly giving us positive feedback on how great Martha is. So I know, and I still have the vision. One time we walked into a legislator's office and Martha just flung herself on the couch and said, like, oh, I'm so upset with you. I can't remember who it was, but it was like it was a therapy session for Martha. But it worked. So thank you.
Martha, it's been a delight to work with you. It's been incredibly impressive to watch you work. And I have to say, one of the silver linings of my own defeat is that I don't have to contemplate the thought of the City of Portland without Martha Pellegrino.
Well, I just want to say congratulations in having me turn the shade of my shirt. So thanks for that. I do want to say to the mayor-elect, they're all exaggerating. They're exaggerating. And I do want to say this and take the opportunity because this team in government relations, and it really is a team, and the individuals on both sides of me in the back room and who are listening upstairs, our vision as an office is to be the best public lobbying firm in the state, and I think we have achieved that. And the great thing is that I find myself doing less and less of that, and this team is doing more and more of that, and it is a credit to the city, but it is also a credit to the leadership that this council is willing to provide in Salem. And each of you, and Mr. Mayor-elect, you all are so important when you come down to Salem, because they do need to hear from you. And it makes a big difference when a city commissioner or mayor goes to Pendleton to sit down with Senator Bill Hansel or Mayor Phil Haug, because it shows that Portland cares about the rest of the state. And that is great work that is going to continue long after I've left. So thank you for the honor. It has been the greatest career privilege of my life to represent the city of Portland and to work with each of you. And I am just so confident in the success of the city going forward. I really believe that this team and the incoming council really are going to be poised to address these most challenging issues that are facing the city. So thank you for this opportunity. And maybe if you'll allow me, I can just wrap up this work session by just saying we really appreciate the feedback that you've given us today. That's been really helpful guidance, obviously, without any concrete decisions being made. But we'll continue to refine these drafts based on your feedback today, and we'll continue to work with you on both the issues and the strategy. And then we'll bring these back to you in early January for the council to consider for adoption. And so thanks to you all and your respective staffs for getting us to the point where we are. And I think that's all we have today.
Thank you very much. Thank you.